Joining us right now, Bill Belichick. Hey, Bill, how are you?
Doing pretty good, Glenn. How are you doing?
How was your weekend? Fred, all right?
Steve, how you guys doing?
Pretty good weekend.
Well, we had a good result yesterday. That's what counts.
That was the longest. That was the longest game, man. That was unbelievable.
That was pretty close to a tie, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was. Yeah. It was unbelievable.
When's the last time they had a tie?
I don't know. When's the last time this team has had a tie? I don't even remember. Do you guys remember?
Have they had a tie?
Never.
Never had a tie?
Never had a tie. Well, came close yesterday.
Since the overtime system, right?
Yeah. Yeah, since the overtime system. All right, let's get to it. And let's talk a little bit about how the game progressed on. And I heard you talk after the game. You know, there were some plays that you could have made during the course of the game, but that's all how it unfolds. As that game progressed on, did your defense seem to mature a little bit more, pick up on a lot of the stuff that you were working on during the course of the week? Because they had their moments early on, and there were seemed to be some adjustments made, and that defense seemed to mature as that game went on.
Well, I think the biggest thing was third down. We played better on third down in the second half, and particularly in the fourth quarter and the overtime. We gave up some third down conversions. The screen to TJ in the first drive, Heap on the wheel route, set up a field goal. So we gave up some conversions on that, which if we had made those, would have made everything look better on defense like it usually does. But overall, I thought the players played hard. We made some adjustments. I think they got the feel kind of how Baltimore plays the game. They have a good mixture of runs and passes and try to keep you off balance. And I think that they started to sort of get into that type of rhythm, and we played better. We got some pretty solid plays in the running game. We had some third down conversions, and so that was good.
Hold on one second. The stopping the running game seemed to be a major factor in that game. Early on, Ray Rice with a lot of that cutbacks. Is that the reason we saw Fletcher out there and that you were spying him on Rice? Because those cutbacks didn't seem to work as that game progressed on. There were bodies on him. When he'd cut back in, somebody was right there on him as the game progressed on.
Right, well, the only time that Dane played was really in passing situations on third down and in 2 minute, and I don't think they ran the ball when he was in there. So, no, he was more of a part of our sub package, and I think that, you know, in the run defense, I don't think you can ever really tell one guy you're going to stop this runner. You have to play good team defense, and the players on the outside have to keep him from getting outside, and the players on the inside have to defeat blockers and defend the gaps that they're responsible for. So whatever plays we stop them on in the running game, I think, you know, there's a lot of people involved in that, not just one guy.
That group of defensive linemen, the first time we've seen them, you know, Warren in the middle, was it Hendricks on the outside, and you put Vinny on the outside end, and it was holding up. They didn't collapse those ends and never get out easy. When did you come up? They haven't played together, those three, have they, in the 3-4, in that order?
No, not so much, Fred. Not so much.
Was it because of size?
Vince has played on both sides, and Gerard's played outside, and we worked him a little bit more inside in this game and in the bye week. And Brandon Dederick has played on both sides, played both left and right. Ron's played on the left. So we just used all those guys. Myron, of course, is on the nose. Mike Wright's played in there. So we used a combination of guys, but it was probably a little more with Dederick on the left side and Vince on the right side. And that seemed to work out okay.
Was that because of the size of those guys? You know, Wright's a little bit more of a pass rusher. Those guys seemed a little bit bigger and were holding up against the stronger offensive line.
We just felt like, based on practice and the matchups in the game, that would be a good group for us. And I think that it worked out all right.
Was there any carryover of confidence from the Miami game? I know it was after the bye, with the bye week and everything, but did that Miami game do anything for especially your young players, their confidence defensively?
I think it reinforced some things, Steve, probably, mm-hmm. Yeah. It's a different game and a whole different set of problems with Baltimore, but I think the fact that we've kind of gotten a little bit better each week, regardless of the stats or the score or anything mm-hmm. else, I think just watching us play and coaching us, I feel like we've gotten better every week. We've prepared a little bit better. We've executed a little bit better. We're more aware of certain situations and things that come up in the game, even though they might only come up one time, and they might not come up at all. But when they do come up, we seem like we're more on top of it, and we anticipate them a little bit better. So hopefully we can continue doing that. But it was like the quarterback sneak on third and one. That was the players were on that. They were on that right away. Oh, yeah. The situation, they were alert for it. Then they got the look. They jumped in there. Jermaine Cunningham was playing right end, and he was all the way down on the guard on that play. So there are some times where those things, not that that situation happened in the Miami game, it didn't, but just the awareness and the confidence to say, okay, I know what this is. I'm going to kind of not do so much of my responsibility because I know what this play is.
You're going to make a play.
Right. Yeah. And just kind of play to play sometimes.
Yep. Coach, they didn't get a lot of the cutbacks. It seems like this team likes the cutbacks, not when go the other way. How much?
Well, he runs everywhere,
yeah,
Fred.
He does.
I mean, he inside, outside, cutback, bounce out. I mean, this guy's got great vision, and he can hit all the way across the board. So, I mean, he did cut back on us a couple times, but he bounces out plenty, and he'll hit it up in the hole too. So, I mean, again, I just think defensively you have to defend all the way across
the
board.
And two things I noticed. It seemed like everyone's playing a position a little bit more technically sound, and when they were tackling – there was a more aggressive tackling. They weren't tackling and let the pile be dragged. They were driving the pile backwards. It seemed like their tackling was much more aggressive and much more emphasis on getting them back and not letting them push the extra yard or two.
Right. Well, the emphasis is always on trying to knock them back, Freddie. You know,
that's right. It just seemed like more successful at it.
Absolutely. Yeah, I think when you look at last year's playoff game, the number of times that Rice got to the line of scrimmage and into the pile yesterday, there were a lot less of them going forward for 4 and 5 yards than what there were in that playoff game. There are a lot of times in the playoff game when you kind of freeze the film when he gets into the line of scrimmage and it's a yard or it's no gain or 2 yards gain, and then they end up with 6 yards and just kind of pushing the pile, falling forward, or not knocking them back, however you want to look at it. And I think that we were definitely played a very physical and aggressive game up front. And part of that's controlling the blockers, and part of it's, as you say, knocking the runner back when you finally get a hold of him.
You were faced at the end of regulation with a possible 62-yard field goal. Were you reluctant to do it because you didn't think Gostkowski could make it, or were you fearful a lot could go wrong, especially that snap?
Well, no, it's a long kick. I mean, it's a long kick. So,
trajectory's
was the wind going across the field?
It was. Yeah. The wind was blowing from our bench to the Ravens' bench, and so just the distance alone's a problem. Put a crosswind in there. We had the ball in the end zone, batted it around. They came up with it. I mean, I think we could have just as easily come up with it if it bounced a little bit differently. And, you don't want to get a kick blocked in that situation, which I think you'd kind of have to drive the ball to get it there. You know, you don't want to pop one up from 62 yards. So, but distance and accuracy and all that, I think it would have been a real tough kick. We just didn't feel that was that was the play in that situation.
Deion Branch, when the game was over, admitted to everybody that there was a play he screwed up at the end of regular season, that the regular portion of the game.
Oh, there's more than one.
Yeah.
He told us to ask you.
But overall, would you look at 4 days, being here for 4 days, and what he had to pick up? Obviously, he was here before, so he knew some of that. Is that pretty amazing that he was able to pick up that much and be that productive in the first game right out of the gate?
Not really. I don't know. Deion's a very smart football player. He's instinctive. He makes good decisions. I think if you remember back to the 04 season where he got hurt in Arizona, if I remember, and then missed like 8 or 9 games and then came back and seemed like he picked up right where he left off. Deion's one of those players that, again, is smart, very instinctive, knows what to do. As long as he's not injured and he's in good shape, I think he can go out there and pick things up pretty quickly, pick up a game plan, pick up the adjustments, and go out there and perform pretty well. And he's done that in the past. So I wasn't that surprised about it. We have seen that before in the past where he's missed some time and then come back in and had a big game.
Coach, at the end of the half, they were punting. 1:03, I think, left, and you had 3 timeouts. You chose not to call a timeout, and then that 36 seconds, I think you called a timeout, and then they punted to you, and then you knelt down on the ball. What was the thought process in that? Why not call the timeout 1:03 and get the ball with 2 timeouts and try and move?
Probably could have done that, Fred. Probably could have done it. I think in the end, we just wanted to make them punt, and if they got off a good punt and we were on a long field, we knew we were getting the ball at the start of the third quarter. Kind of thought about just letting the half run out, but really just making them actually punt the ball, snap it, kick it, anything can happen, something can go wrong. So just make them go through that. Probably you could have made that timeout a little bit sooner.
But there's no thought in stopping at 1:03 and trying to get 4 or 5 plays in on offense, or was the offense out of sorts at that time?
No, I don't think that was the case. What was it? What did down distance end up being on that? It's like fourth and what?
Fourth and, I'm not quite sure.
I mean, it wasn't that long,
right.
Was it?
I don't remember it being that long.
I mean, I think, you know, my first thing was I wasn't sure that they were going to punt.
Yeah.
You know, with that time,
that's
thought
right. There was a question of whether they go for it or not.
Right, whether they would actually punt it or not. So, I didn't, you know, just wanted to probably, you know, get to a point where I felt like, well, they had to punt the ball, and you know, if we made a play, if we blocked it, if they had a bad snap,
third
we,
and nine.
Was it third?
Was
and nine?
It nine? Okay.
Yeah, third and nine.
All right.
Yeah. Was there in the second half? It seemed like Flacco wasn't going after the cornerbacks as much as he did in the first half. Was there something that he saw or something that the cornerbacks did that took that away, or did they just change up and go in a different direction?
Well, I'd say we played a lot more cover two, Steve.
Yep.
Yeah, we played a lot more cover two in the second half than we did in the first half. So mm-hmm. I think that probably had a little to do with it. You know, I think he was looking inside for the tight end or the slot receiver, and a couple times those guys were jammed, and you know, they hit Heap a couple times, too. You know, they hit him on the fake screen pass, yep, over the middle and so forth. But we played a little more cover, too, I think, on the corners, which he still threw it, yep, out there a couple times, but I thought it might have slowed it down.
Yep.
And the offense, when the second half moved the ball, were you going a little bit short underneath? Did you drop the safeties way off? And it looked like a couple play actions. He got to Walker and those guys. But it looked like you're going a little bit shorter, a little more crossing in the second half with a little more success.
Well, I think it's hard to get, you know, it's hard to get behind that defense. Bukowski or Ed Reed, whoever the free safety is, those guys play, they're back there pretty far. And I think you just got to be careful about throwing it up on them because they're deep and they cover a lot of ground. We felt like we could, as deep as they were, that would open up some intermediate passes. We hit Welker over the middle on a play action pass. Hit Branch on an in cut. You know, as deep as those safeties get, then that creates a little more space between the safeties and the linebackers. And we tried to attack that a little bit. But their linebackers do a good job of getting back, and so sometimes we actually had to, you know, dump it off and throw it in front of the backers.
From the reaction you had when Merriweather came off the field after the 15-yard penalty, the head-to-head contact, you were not real happy about when can he make those hard hits without leading and launching with a hit? I mean, can't
well,
that
we,
be done?
We, yeah, well, defensively, you have to. I mean, you have to. That's those plays are illegal, and you can't do it. So that's what the rule is. We have to play by the rules, and we coach that, and players understand it. You're right. It's a split-second decision. It's no different than hitting the quarterback below the knees or above the shoulders. But, again, it's the responsibility of the defender or the pass rusher to make that contact in a legal manner, so we have to do it.
You want your players to be aggressive. I'm sorry, yeah. You want your players to be aggressive, your defensive players in particular. Is there a fine line between how you coach that and you know, because you like to have the intimidation part there, but can you actually coach a guy to make sure that he's not making those split second decisions, the bad decisions?
Well, I think you have to. Yeah, you can. You have to. You keep the aggressiveness. It's technique.
Yep,
it's technique. You can't hit him above the shoulders. You can't lead with your head. You've got to launch. Yep. You've got to make contact in a legal manner. You can be aggressive. You just have to do it legally. And as a defensive player, I understand there's split second decisions. He's moving. The ball's in the air. You're moving. Things happen quickly. It's you know, it's not like just, you know, lining up a tackling dummy and running in there and hitting them. It's a lot different than that. But those are the decisions that we have to make on the field. And that's the way defensive rules are. It's the same for our defense as it is for Baltimore's and everybody else's. We just got to do a good job with it.
There were a lot of hits this weekend, so the league's talking an awful lot about it. Last night, I don't know if you heard Rodney Harrison, your former player, but he came out and said that he used to put away a fund at the beginning of the season because he knew...
Big fund.
that he was going to be fined X amount of times. And he said it never changed the way he played the game. Obviously, some of those rules are a little bit different, including this one that we're talking about. But he said the only way that you cure the problem is to suspend players. Tony Dungy, ex-coach next to him, said, yeah, it would change the way you approach it because if you're a coach, you want your players to be real physical out there. Do you think suspension would change how a player deals with it? Now, you, the way you reacted, unless I'm wrong with this, Merriweather didn't play for a while until Page got hurt and you put him back out in the field. So you obviously took him out of the game at that point for his action.
Well, I can't speak for what another player or another person thinks or what their motivation is or that type of thing. So I don't know.
What would you think about suspension? Would that solve some of the problem, do you think? As opposed to fine, is a fine in football?
You know, I would think in general that it's rules changes, in my opinion, should be made at the end of the season with a lot of thought and consideration given to everything, all aspects of it. I think making up rules as you go along every week, well, we had this, we're going to change this, we had that, we're going to change that, we had something else, we're going to change something else. And you start changing a lot of things, then sometimes there are other effects that you don't really take fully into consideration, ripple effects that are tributaries of that, of that decision that you've made. And I think it's, generally speaking, I think decisions like that are much better made over time of, analysis, study, conversation, and, trying to make sure you get it right. I don't really like to make it up as you go along rule, the Indianapolis game with the timeouts with Vrabel and Vanderjagt on the kick, and the next week change the rule, and we're going to change the overtime rule in the middle of the game and all that. I mean, I don't think that's the right way to do it. That's my personal, regardless of what the rule is. Sometimes I guess you don't have a choice, and the ball hits the top of the roof in the new stadium or something. You have to figure out what you're going to do about that. But again, I just think it's. Those are the kind of things that, you put a lot of thought and study into, and, now if it hits flagrant enough, certainly a player can be disciplined. I mean, that's within the rights of the commissioner, and that's been done before, whether it be fines or whatever it happens to be. So I don't really see where that's changed, but just to have a carte blanche rule that's different from what it is now, I don't know. I just, generally speaking, I don't think that's the way to do it. Is to change things in midstream.
Well, coach, if they did start throwing players out during a game, another discretion of the referees, right? That could change the complex of a game during a game. It gives too much more control to the ref.
Right. Well, I think they've been specifically told not to do that. Is my understanding on that, because we've had. We've had a couple of those hits along the way. Hope's hit on Welker in the Pittsburgh game. Even in the Jets game, Smith's hit on Welker. We've had plays like that that have been personal foul, helmet-to-helmet hits. And the officials have always said in those situations, we're not going to throw the player out. We're going to let the discipline committee review it. The league office, Gene Washington, and whoever does that, and review it, and then let them make the decision. They're only going to enforce the penalty. So that's kind of the way they've handled that. And again, this has been over a series of years. This hasn't just been after one game. That's the way it's been for previous years. And my understanding of it is that's the same system that's in place now, that it would really take a lot for a player to get ejected. I'm sure if the official thought that it was a truly deliberate, intentional hit and not just a quick reaction type of thing, he might look at it differently, but that's kind of what they've been instructed to do. So that's my understanding.
It's a week in which you were playing a very physical team, and obviously it was one of the factors in the game yesterday is that you matched and maybe even topped them in how physical you guys played in that game yesterday. That seemed to be a real rough game out there.
Well, it was. It's two physical teams, and both teams playing hard. There's a lot at stake, and game came right down to the wire. Went 13 extra minutes, so there were a lot of hard hitting, tough plays by a lot of tough, hard hitting football players. That's the way it is, and I think it was a physical game. I know we got a lot of sore guys in our locker room. I'm sure they do today too. Glad that we were able to come out with three more points than they had.
Coach, your outside back is Cunningham. Looks very physical. He's got good reaction time. And Nikovic, they seem to be playing much better, much more aware. Give me a little rundown on Cunningham. It looks like he rushed the passer well. He reacts to things well. He gets into plays. How much has he matured since the beginning of the season?
Well, I think, Fred, to follow up on what you said, I think that outside linebackers probably had their best game of the year. Yesterday, I thought that they were physical and did a good job in the running game. Jermaine, unfortunately, missed most of the preseason. He practiced up until the Saints game and then missed some time from right before the Saints preseason game all the way through the rest of the the Giants game. So he really didn't have any training. He had some training camp, but he really didn't have any preseason games. And his preseason, unfortunately, started at Cincinnati. And so now he's 5 regular season games into it, which is, I don't want to say about a training camp, but it's about a good solid preseason and a little more. So he's definitely improved on a daily basis. Jermaine works hard. He's got good talent. I mean, he's a big kid. He's strong. He's physical. He runs well. And what he needs is experience and repetition and just, you know, getting used to doing things differently than what he did in college when he played as really a defensive end in a three-point stance. He still played at the end of the line, but his responsibilities here and his techniques are a little bit different than they were in college. But he's worked hard to pick those up. I think it's gotten better every week. And you know, he's got a real good future ahead of him if he continues to work hard and really work on a lot of little things.
Hernandez was a good part of your offense again. The two drops in overtime, rookie mistakes or just over-anxious?
Well, it's certainly not a question of hands. Yep. You know, he has outstanding hands. He can make any catch. When Aaron drops a ball, it's because of concentration and technique, trying to run with it before he's really got it secured. So, you know, so really that's no excuse for those. I know he's as disappointed about them as any of us are. But he works hard in the passing game. He works hard to catch the ball. He's just got to, you know, use good technique and really concentrate on looking the ball all the way in before he starts to run with it.
I can't recall him dropping the ball at all up until
not wide
until
open
until
like that.
And you're a rookie in an overtime game, in a big game, you never know. But did you anticipate him early on in camp being that viable a threat offensively? Could you see it early on?
Well, you could see that he's hard to cover. Mm-hmm. You know, he's a tough matchup for anybody. It's tough for a linebacker to cover him because he's fast. And it's tough for a defensive back to cover him because he's so much bigger than they are. I mean, he's 250 pounds, whatever it is. So he's a tough matchup for that, the linebackers and the DBs or a corner even who can run with him, but he has a big size advantage. And he's quick. He's Aaron's a smart football player. He really understands how to set up routes and how to set up defenders and get open. So even a player that has his physical skills, he does a good job on his route technique.
Certainly doesn't play like a rookie.
No.
Coach, Crumpler on, I think it was a third down, and he dropped it, and it looked like the sun was in his eyes. He was going like that to the sun. Was the sun facing him? Remember the third down play? It went into his chest, and he said, looked at Brady, and said, I couldn't see. Was the sun coming in that point in his eye, in the eyes of the receivers?
Well, the sun did come over it came from the closed end toward the lighthouse, kind of angled from their bench to our bench. That was sort of the angle that it was on. And, I don't know if that affected
him
like on the player or not. But
it's,
probably. That sun can be a little bit of a factor. If you remember in the playoff game, when Baltimore kicked off going in that same direction, they tried to pop kick it over there in front of our bench to, you know, put it up in the sun. You know, it's something that I think you got to be a little bit aware of on a 1 o'clock game.
How big was the Mesko punt? And then, of course, you got a penalty tacked on. But how big was that punt?
Well, that was, you know, Zoltan really, you know, came through. That was a big punt, and we really needed it. And, you know, he's another kid that's worked hard, that's getting better. It's not perfect yet, but he did a real good job of holding yesterday. I thought our operation snapper holder kicker was good, was solid yesterday. And then, you know, punting, he had some good ones. He had a couple that, you know, that I know he'd like to have hit a little bit better. You know, he's a left-footed punter, and the ball, you know, was able to fortunately hit it in high in an area with the wind and all that looked like Zivakowski didn't really want to get over and deal with it, and then that led to some extra yardage. So, you know, even when he misses them, you know, his height and the you know, a lot of times the location of the ball just doesn't make it easy for the returner to get it. You know, we'd like for him to be high and long with great hang time and give our guys a chance to cover him, but you know, sometimes those miss hits, if they're high enough and the wind can get them, it's still a hard ball for the returner to handle, and I think that's what happened yesterday.
It's interesting hearing you talk, because we're talking so much about younger players who have shown in the last few weeks some progress, yet it's still not a complete picture. As a coach, do you kind of feel good that you're starting to turn the corner. You're starting to see what you saw in these guys when you sat around and you drafted these players. You're starting to see right now that they're getting it. They're figuring it out a little bit.
Well, we'll see how it goes. We played five games. We haven't won anything yet. We got a long way to go. So, well, we'll see how it goes. But, you know, I think every day in practice is important. Each week's important. And I think of young players, some of the ones we've mentioned, you know, if they work hard, they really, you know, take it a professional approach on it daily and improve every time they walk out on the field, every time they get into a meeting, that they're moving further ahead and get a chance to do it on the field. They work at it and improve on it and do the right things, then I think they will continue to improve. But that's something that, you know, each individual has to bring himself. You know, nobody else can do it for them. And if they put that kind of work and effort and professionalism into it, then I think they'll be all right. If they don't, or if it slacks off, then I don't think it'll be so good. So that's the challenge.
With the number of young kids you got playing, how long is it, in general, does it take them to get the college out of their system? You know, we get so many rookies in there. They're used to a different system. You used to be able to outrun guys or react.
Right.
You know, make a mistake and catch up. Well, you can't do that in the pros. How long do you think that takes till they get out of the system? 4, 5, 6 games? And, you know,
well,
get screamed at in film sessions for a couple hours?
Well, hopefully they figured that out already. I mean, I think a lot of them figured that out in the spring. You know, they come out of college, they're better than everybody.
Yeah.
They're bigger, stronger, faster, and more experienced than everybody. They get in the NFL, and from day one, there are other players that are just as physically skilled as them and certainly with a lot more experience. So that's, you know, I think most of them have already seen that they've met their match.
All right, let's take a 90-second break. It's a West Coast trip out to San Diego. We'll talk about it next with the coach. All right, back here on Patriots Monday on the Big Show. We're live down here at Gillette Stadium with Coach Bill Belichick. It is the San Diego Chargers next up on the chart. This is a strange team, Coach, and it almost seems to follow the same formula every year. They get off to a terrible start, and then the switch goes on. They become week to week as good as any team in the league, and they've obviously had some struggles in the postseason, but how does it work out every year that they get off to that slow start and then that switch?
Well, I don't know. They've had a lot of success in the last two-thirds of the season, 06, 07, 08. And maybe they've got two teams, the home team and the away team. They beat Jacksonville at home by 25 and Arizona by 30 and
they're averaging
lost
like
on
40,
the road.
Aren't they? Or at home, 40 a game or 38 or something like
that?
Yeah,
I mean, they're winning, just not even competitive. And, of course, we go out there 2 years ago and, you know, get beat by 3 touchdowns. So we know what they're capable of. They're leading the league in offense, leading the league in defense. They've got a lot of talented players. They can, you know, they've lost some games because of penalties and mistakes and turnovers and some bad plays in the kicking game. But they do a lot of things well. They're a very talented team, and you know, I can't imagine them being on this track for too much longer. They're just too good.
Tell us about Ryan Matthews, their running back, the rookie running back.
You know, good, tough player, comes from a great program there at Fresno. Pat Hill, close friend of mine. I know how much he believes in the running game, and he's well coached. Got good speed, power, catch the ball. He's good all around back. I think they can, you know, do pretty much whatever they want to do with him. He can run inside, he can run outside, and he's a tough guy to bring down. He's tough.
They were leading the league in defense now. Giants.
Yeah, I think they were number one in defense. Yeah, they were ahead of Baltimore. So.
Really.
Oh, yeah.
Have they been because Merriman's out. Who is they? How's their pass rush been? Look, the games I saw looked like they didn't get a great pass rush. But
well, I mean, again, some games have been better than others, like they all have. But they've, you know, they've got a good solid team. They're big up front. They're fast. They're good in the secondary. They do a good job.
And they do have Rivers, who can unleash the ball. I mean, top five quarterbacks in the NFL at least.
And again, they're very capable. They've had a lot of big plays, and some games haven't gone as well. But they've played at home. They've lit it up. They seem very comfortable there, at least so far this season. And they haven't played quite as well on the road. But again, as Glenn, you pointed out, the past couple of years they've gotten off to a slow start, and
I get it.
And then just broke loose right around this time, the fourth, fifth, sixth game. So you know, we know how dangerous they are, and you know, we just need to have a real good week and be ready to go out there. It's going to be – this is a very talented football team. They're certainly – they're not without talent.
Will you be going out early? And this is a first cross-country trip for your rookies. Anything you need to specify to them if you're going out early?
Well, we'll go out Friday after practice.
Okay.
And so we'll be there Friday night and then have all day Saturday to kind of adjust to the time change and so forth and play Sunday. So, I mean, I think basically it's as much of a normal road trip as it can be, longer flight and all that. We try to always try to keep things as consistent as we can when we travel and at home so that we're as much of a routine as we can be on. But that'll be the same as it always is, just a longer flight and just being out there Friday night instead of Saturday afternoon.
Do you need some hall monitors to watch the young kids?
No, you have a little security.
Yeah. We'll keep them out of trouble.
Oh, please.
Yeah. No, we're going out there for business. We're not going out there to go see the San Diego Zoo.
But it is kind of weird when you get out there. There's the palm trees. You know, used to the dark weather. Obviously, it's sunny. I mean, it's a weird...
It was sunny in Miami, too. But, you know, I think we all know that's just being a professional. You're into that city for a short amount of time, but you're there for one purpose, and that's to win a football game. That's the only reason we go out there. We're not going out to, you know, go sightseeing and all that.
Surfing.
We're not surfing. Yeah. We're going out there to play football. So
seafood.
That needs to be our attitude and our mentality, and that's what it's been on the road, and that's what it needs to be.
Vince Wilfork on a surfboard just doesn't...
Four surfboards. It's one would sink.
Darren Sproles, again, yesterday had a big run back. He seems to put them on kicks and even on punts in great field position. They always seem to start. How important is special teams? And this is something that you guys did so well here a couple of weeks ago in a game in Miami.
Well, very important. It's hard enough to stop to stop the Chargers on a long field, let alone put them on a short one, put them in midfield or put them in our territory. So, and Sproles is, he's tough. He runs hard. He's very aggressive. By the same token, he has good speed, and he can bounce outside and get to the corner. So you've got to really be worried about containing him and keeping him inside on those returns. But if you're out there too wide and you create too much space inside, he'll pop it and go through there. He runs hard. He's tough, and he's looking for a little opening. He can accelerate through it.
Their playmakers in the past defensively have been Merriman, Cromartie, a couple other guys. Who are their playmakers now on defense?
You know, I think overall they have a good team defense. Phillips certainly is a force for them, and they have a good defensive front. But they just collectively, I think they play good team defense. Not all on one guy's shoulders, but they play good solid.
More base? Do they blitz? What's the percentage of blitzing from this team?
They'll pressure you to change up on it, but they're not a huge blitzing team. Not like let's say the Jets and Philadelphia in the past, teams like that. They mix it in there, certainly keep you honest. You got to be ready to pick them up. But they rely on good sound, good football. And it's not
two.
A big gadget team. Two, three, cover one, cover four. I mean, they'll mix it up on you.
How dangerous are teams when they have injuries? And this team has a few of them right now. We're not sure exactly what their receiving core is going to look like. But we were talking earlier that Baltimore might have looked at this team and said, "Oh, Danny Woodhead, and look at some of the guys that are filling in because they've lost the Kevin Faulks or whatever." How dangerous are teams like that? And the guys that are coming in want to play. They want a job. They're busting their ass. They're going to come up and play well. And you really don't know an awful lot about them because you haven't spent a lot of film time sitting there with film study and saying, "This is what this guy does. This is the tendency we got to watch for."
Right, and that's very common. And you see players, San Diego's a good example. They had LT and then Turner. And, when Turner got a chance to run, that was his chance. And he ran hard. And now we all see what kind of back he is down in Atlanta. So, yeah, sometimes you rather play against the first team than that second team guy that's been chomping at the bit, waiting to get his opportunity, and then, jumps in there and lights it up. So, everybody in this league has talent. There's nobody in the NFL that doesn't have talent. Each player does, or they wouldn't be here. There are plenty of players that have talent that aren't in this league for one reason or another. So, we have to respect everybody and know that whoever's on the field is certainly capable of making plays if we don't do a good job of doing what we're supposed to do against them.
I know that's, you talk about players coming in. It's not like you're going to McDonald's and getting some guys to run. I remember we played Texas back when I was in college. They had Roosevelt Leaks, and he got hurt, and they had a freshman named
Earl
Campbell.
Yeah.
Oh, geez, you got that young kid in there.
Yeah.
So you never know what you're going to get.
Yeah, put Rosie back in.
Please, Rosie, get out of here.
That's
but
right.
You're right, some of these guys you have a book on, they are pros. They made the team, and they're a high-level player. So when you put them in there, they're going to give you a run for your money.
Yeah, I mean, certainly Danny's a good example. You know, didn't get a chance to play a whole lot, and then has gotten an opportunity here and has really done the most to take advantage of it. You know, Edelman was a good example of that last year. So, you know, guys get an opportunity, and if you underestimate them, they'll usually make you pay for it. So you can't take anybody, can't take anything for granted in this league.
All right, time right now for the coach's question of the week. It's brought to you by AutoTrader.com.
Me?
No, it's Fred. Now compare new and used cars side by side at AutoTrader.com, the ultimate automotive marketplace and proud partner of Patriots football. This will be the best question of the day because Fred's going to give it to you. Coach.
Okay, Fred.
Is the trade deadline tomorrow?
Mankin. Trade deadline tomorrow.
Mankins, plural.
Mankins.
What did I say? Mankins.
You said Mankin.
Mankin.
Well, he's got me nervous because it's a Mankin deal. He's giving me the eyeball. Any news on Mankins?
No.
Traded.
Any? How about
same answer as last one.
Any trades at all? The deadline is tomorrow, is it?
Yes, tomorrow for yes.
Any deals?
You're not going to surprise us now.
Anything happen? Anything that may be happening? Anything? Am I all encompassing enough here? Am I covering enough bases?
How big will the no cover?
Is there a possibility you'll do something between now and the trading deadline?
Yes, have dinner.
Well, you never really know. You never really know. There's always personnel conversations going on the first 5-6 weeks of the season. Teams call each other and, you know, would you be interested in this guy? Is this guy available? That kind of thing. But as far as anything serious going on at this point, no. But you never know.
Mm-hmm. Do the phones ring more as you get toward that deadline in the NFL?
Not necessarily, no. I think it all depends on, you know, your particular situation. If you're looking for something and you feel like you need to, you know, this is an area of your team that you really need to address and you're willing to do whatever it takes to, then you call teams that, you know, might have an extra player there. I think it's hard to trade at the trading deadline because if you trade a player away, you're giving up a player that gives your team depth. At whatever position it's at, it gives your team some depth, and then how do you feel without that player? You know, then that's a decision. The other thing is, if you trade a player now, assuming you could trade him at the end of the year, you probably would get about the same for him. So if you're going to trade a player now or trade him at the end of the year, you might as well trade him at the end of the year and have him play for you this year. Now,
good point.
If you don't have him at the end of the year, then that changes that dynamic a little bit, then you say, okay, well, we don't have this player at the end of the year. We might not get anything for him. Do we want to try to get something now? But how will that affect our depth at that particular position for what that player does? And so, and if you're on the flip side of it, you're saying, okay, well, we're going to trade for a player. We've only got him for X number of games, 10, 11 games, however many games you have left. What's that really worth? How quickly can we get him in here? Can we get him ready to go? How much are we really going to get out of this guy? And if it's for more than 1 year, then that adds a little more to it. If it's just for 1 year, then that's a question that you, how much is that really worth to you? What do you want to sacrifice to bring that in?
But if you have a guy that hasn't been in camp yet, it might be a little different.
Who could come into camp in week 10.
Week 10, you know.
Yet there's still a franchise tag when the season's over. So.
Right. Well, again, the issue with Logan is, number one, he doesn't have a signed contract.
Right.
So you can't trade a player unless he has a signed contract.
Right.
So. That would be another
obstacle.
Yeah, that would be something else that would have to be resolved before it could even happen.
Yeah.
But if he was going to come in week 10 anyway, he would have to, at that time, sign the tender offer, correct?
He has to have a signed contract in order to participate in training camp or beyond, yes.
So if he signs that tender offer and you contact him 4 weeks earlier or 3 weeks, 4 weeks earlier, and say if you're going to come in week 10, maybe we can facilitate a deal to send you someplace where they may be able to give you the contract that you're looking for. Does something like that work?
Sure. Once it's signed, then the player can be traded. I'm just saying, as things currently stand right now, there's no signed contract with Logan, and therefore we can't trade him.
Mm-hmm. I know you've said this before, and it makes sense. When you look at the football, and that's probably why we don't see a lot of trades, in baseball, it's two-thirds of the way into the season. So the teams that aren't going to make the playoffs pretty well have a good idea they're not going to make the playoffs. And so they're dealing those players to get younger players. In football, and you've explained this, it's done earlier in the year because it's very difficult to integrate somebody 2/3 of the season, with the exception of maybe a couple positions, into your team, right? Pick up your system and everything else.
Right. Yeah, right. I mean, I'm no baseball expert, but I think it's a lot easier to play left field for whatever team you're playing for, whether you switch teams or not, that the overall dynamics of how you play left field and how you hit are much more individual than trying to play left tackle. So that's, there's just so much more involved in the teamwork and communication and assignments and adjustments and all that in football compared to other sports, particularly baseball.
So if you want to make a trade in football, even at this point of the year, it's very difficult to bring somebody in. Where do you find the time? You've got a game on Sunday. You've got to ramp up this guy pretty quickly. I mean, Dion probably was a slight exception in that he's been here before, knows Brady, and has a fairly good idea of how you run your offense.
Well, right. I think it was a lot easier for us to bring in a player like Dion that we knew, that we had a background with, that we knew, had a good basis for our offense. Probably like it was for Denver in the Maroney trade, similar type of thing, versus getting somebody that, I don't want to say you're starting from scratch with, but, again, if you trade for him and it takes you 4 or 5 weeks to get him ready, I mean, what do you really have?
Right.
A quarterback that has to learn that whole system and the audibles and all your terminology.
It'd be a lot to.
Or a nose tackle who runs the defense. I mean,
it'd be a lot to.
They
to
run
ask.
The defense? I didn't know that.
Yeah, we call the plays too.
All right, Coach. Congratulations on yesterday's win. Good luck out in San Diego. We'll talk to you sometime next week.
All right,
whenever
Coach.
You get back.
Sounds good. All right.
See
thank you.
Okay. Quick break, and we're right back here on the Big Show.